as panelists are gathering here, I'll just start. Back in November in New York, we had a discussion around mental health where we talked about the gut-brain connection and the fact that nutritional foods feed the brain and processed foods starve the brain. We talked about the addictive properties of sugar and how they, you know, how they feed into this. Today, the backdrop is metabolic health and the decline in metabolic health that correlates with the rise in processed foods in our diets over about the last 50 years. And when I say metabolic health, I'm also talking about the consequences. So everything from the rise of diabetes, heart-related diseases, cancer, dementia, all of which America is a leader in all those categories in the world, despite our amazing medical system. You know, and we hear about these as a health issue, but these are really an economic issue. And I think, Nora, you may be talking about some of the numbers. There's some really staggering numbers of how this is going to affect our economy, you know, in the years to come if we don't do something about it. And so I think for a lot of us, it's really an issue of choice, right? We choose to walk through the fruits and vegetables in our nearby grocery store to get them to the more convenient foods. But we're here on the south side of Chicago, and for a lot of people, access to nutritional foods is something that's not available. And a lot of people hear about them as is called food deserts. But in the vein of 361, and it's, you know, it's support of people who do innovative things. I have a really amazing panel of five people here who are addressing this in innovative ways. And so by way of sort of introduction, if you all want to talk about what you do a little bit, but I'll kind of open up with a question to each one of you, starting with you, Nora. So I guess if you could talk a little bit about what you're doing with children and why that's important and sort of what children are seeing today in their typical diet and what you're doing to help address that.
Awesome, thank you. Well, I'll start with, you were talking about the macro numbers and the impact on our economy. About $3.8 trillion is spent every year on healthcare, about 17% of our GDP, and we really refer to that as sick care. It's downstream, it's spent on the metabolic health issues that Anne just outlined, and it is it's a reactive model where we really believe that it's important to treat health early and help kids develop healthy habits earlier and become metabolically healthy and have long lifespans and long health spans to prevent that economic strain and to help people live their happiest lives possible. We think every kid deserves a chance to have a happy, healthy, long life. And so we really look at systems change and trying to redesign our food system with children's health at the center and thinking about our current structures. And so that's what we focus on in our nonprofit. So we do public policy, advocacy, awareness building, and then we actually, our theory of change is we look at our schools, because schools are actually the largest restaurant chain in America. They feed over 30 million students. It's over 5 billion meals a year. So we're asking, what if those meals are nutritious, delicious, sustainable, climate smart meals that really help kids thrive, that help them learn, focus, and grow? And we think that if we can change that system, that's the beginning, and that's how we help kids develop those healthy habits earlier. So that's really what my nonprofit Eat Real is focused on, and we were founded by some leading doctors who really want to get to the root cause of these issues upstream and have interventions earlier. And it's working. It's like we have a huge wait list for our program. We went from 50 to 500 schools in 3 years. Like the people are parents, grandparents, doctors are reaching out from all over the country to get involved. So it's happening. I think one thing I just wanted to segue from the last panel on Ukraine. This morning, actually, I was reading a press release where top government officials were saying that we see a hunger storm coming. So in the United States, just in the last 2 months, food banks have reported that hunger is up 20% month over month, and so like 85% of food banks are seeing an uptick. And we're seeing there's a global food shortage that's coming, and we're and global food insecurity, and that it's starting early indicators show that there's an uptick right now. And that's we really see it as an omnidemic, where there's integrated issues of there's food insecurity that's growing, inflation is up 8.5%, we're seeing massive supply chain shortages, we have a pandemic, COVID-19, on top of a pre-existing health epidemic, and the health epidemic is that right now in the United States, only 12% of people are metabolically healthy. 88% of America is sick, early indicators of sickness. So, and it's affecting all of us in this room. We all know somebody with diabetes, heart disease, cancer. It's highly personal. It's hitting my family. It's hitting every family. And it's disproportionately impacting communities of color and BIPOC communities. And so we think that there's this, and I'll pass the mic, but there's a truly an omnidemic, and that there are multiple layers of pandemics that in the processed food-related disease pandemic actually existed before COVID. U.S. lifespan for 4 years prior to the pandemic was on decline. So that means for the first time in U.S. history, millennials are on track to have short, the next generation millennials are on track to have shorter lifespans than their parents. And that's so unacceptable in a country with so much resource and so much potential. So we think that it's really important to get to root cause upstream and start to right this ship and restore health span and lifespan in America, starting with our children. And
thanks so much, Nora. If you can pass the mic down to Clinton. I actually was introduced to Nora by one of the doctors who founded her organization, Robert Lustig, who wrote this book earlier this year called Metabolical, which recommended reading for everybody just to read about what's going on with different systems affecting this. Clinton, you are addressing this issue in an entrepreneurial effort in North Tulsa. So we'd love to hear about what you're doing and your market and how you got started and everything about it.
Well, good day. I don't know, is the mic on? Good day. My idea was given to me by God. I lived a different lifestyle probably from anybody in here. Well, not anybody, but some of us can relate. But God took what was, instead of me taking from the community, gave me something to give back. So, I moved here I'm born in Tulsa, raised there, but I grew up in Tampa, Florida. We work for Musa Halal, All Natural Meats. So I've been eating that for years, and I moved back to Tulsa, and it's garbage. I was like, wow, what is this meat? And what is this meat? And all the stores, they only got three stores for all south side of Chicago, basically. Three grocery stores, and they all carried the same product, garbage. So what we came up with was, why not? You are what you eat. So if you're eating garbage, that's how your attitude is. Every day your mind is garbage. I'm going to go shoot something. I'm going to rob somebody. I'm going to do something. But if you better the people, like in the Bible, say you got a fat cow, skinny cow, skinny cow. Well, they've been feeding the people the skinny cow for 60 years in Tulsa, and I'm bringing the fat cow for the same price as the skinny. And just trying to make a better way for the community to live and eat. And then you are what you eat, like I said. If you're eating good, you're feeling better. And I'm just trying to give back to the community. And it's, I don't know, they say I'm the only guy in the country doing it. But, I mean, it's hard, but it's fair. And I'm a small businessman. I started from, believe it or not, the 4th of July tent. We did that, and God blessed us with like $9,000, and we just took what little change we had and we made it, and we're making it happen. I could use more help, y'all, as far as equipment, and the storefront would be nice in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know, I started off this business strictly for food stamp people. 80% of my clientele is food stamps, because those 80% of the people that don't eat well. I'm 53 today, it's my birthday. I don't have a blood pressure, I don't have nothing. All praises be to God. I'm not sick. You know, my wife, she has blood pressure problems because she's been eating that crap. Mm. I've been eating good food my 53 years, thank God, and I'm healthy. So, I mean, you just got to give the people back a better product. That processing to kill you. Mm-hmm. All that chicken nuggets and the this and the, that's no good. But, I mean, that's it for me. I know we're on the time limit. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you. If you don't mind, passing the mic down the mic down, I kind of wanted to turn it over to Eric, who is addressing nutritional access, but some other aspects of health in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So Eric, I'll turn it over to you if you can tell us about what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you for having me. My name is Eric Freeman, and I'm the founder of Mindset Meals. We are bringing well-being, access to well-being. So the way we're doing that, I guess I'll give you the origin story, like why it started. Very similar to you, it just came from lived experience. Okay. We didn't have any access to healthy food growing up, and that mixed with something that happened when I was 19 put me in a really dark place mentally. I played the victim role heavily throughout my 20s. And that thing that happened when I was 19, it made me feel like karma owed me. It made me feel like society owed me. And I lived my life that way. So at the age of 26, I had the opportunity to move to South Florida and help a friend start a meal delivery service. And we grew up kind of poor, so I didn't really travel much growing up. And it was culture shock when I moved to South Florida. There were people in positions that looked like me. Positions of power that look like me. There are people that own businesses that look like me. And in West Michigan, where I'm from, there's not that much. So it was everything I needed. I was 270 pounds. I'm 6 foot. No reason for me to be that heavy. My blood pressure was sky high. And most importantly, I was in a victimized mindset. We were three kids under the age of 30 with no business plan. So I'm sure you guys know how that worked out. Came back to West Michigan after about a year, and I just started grinding, man. I started reaching out to organizations that help new entrepreneurs, startups, and built relationships. That's my superpower. It started off as an individual meal prep company. It was an individual meal prep company. You guys pick what you want. We'll deliver to you 2 times a week. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that to make a bigger impact, and honestly, to be quite frank with you, much, much bigger profit, let's go to business to business. I started reaching out to large organizations in West Michigan. We started delivering them meals. And what we found is that they subsidize the meals for their employees. So that incentivizes them to eat healthier. During the pandemic, we had to halt production. We are relaunching here in 3 to 6 months. We have three pilot programs that are ready to go. So a little bit about the model. We serve meals to large organizations. They subsidize the meals. But then also that organization will cut a check to help us provide meals, those same clean, delicious, whole meals to communities that don't have those meals, food deserts, is what you guys call them. The communities I came from, to help them get into a healthier, more productive life. So, that's the gist of the story.
You want to talk a little bit about the app you're working on?
I told you were going to have to push me on that. So how I see this working is we get our foot in the door with these delicious whole meals, right? We get our foot into the door with these meals. But how I see it becoming sticky is with technology. And what we're right now, we're talking to people to help us develop an app that helps with behavioral change, that helps with behavioral change in the space of mental health, in the space of financial health and physical health. And you'll be able to order the meals from that app as well. So we're developing that as we speak. So, yeah. I'm grinding.
So hearing your story. So I keep asking you guys to pass the mic, but if you could pass it down to Yvette. Yvette, you're addressing this issue right here on the south side of Chicago in a couple different ways, so I'd love to hear about that.
Yes, and I wrote my notes so I could stay on track. This is an urgent situation. When you came to the quarry, you see that it looks like it's been bombed out or starved out, and same thing with stores and nutrition. We started our Real Men Cook Father's Day event when our company, our marketing firm, was doing very well. 10 years later, we had given away $1 million in proceeds from that organization, and we started the nonprofit Real Men Charities. Ironically, you can imagine a Father's Day event with food sampling, there's a lot of meat and there's a lot of male testosterone. So the bigger the meat, the bigger, you know, the bigger the satisfaction that, you know, that is a real man. And so, ironically, my husband and I, who started it, were vegetarians. So So our give back was like after the celebration food is to teach the community that that is celebration food and that there is nutritious food needed for us to survive and compete and on a healthy level. So we have been in community gardens. We have set up community gardens. We had measured and set up a program called Real Men Building Healthy Kids and Strengthening Families in 8 elementary schools, 3 to 8, grades 3 to 8, third grade to fifth grade, to teach children with men teaching them that it's about fresh fruits and vegetables. It's about what kind of salad you could hook up rather than what kind of meat you could hook up, et cetera. And we did that for 2 years with the Chicago Community Health Council because health and wellness go together. Mm-hmm. It's really about what are you going to put in your body to then perform well. I'm 68 years old. And so this is an example of eating to live and eating to stay vibrant. And all of the businesses and all the ideas we had at the quarry come from, you know, being vibrant enough and able to put some ideas out that allow people to eat to live. So I'm going to just go to some of the things we're doing today in our quarry kitchen. So buying the quarry and having the shared kitchen was a means to put out the kind of food that we thought would be good for the community. So the pandemic comes 1 year after we had our first year of purchasing that venue, which was an entertainment venue. Our pivot was to make that entertainment venue a food stability center, and working with the Chicago Food Depository, we were able to distribute 1 million pounds of food, including produce and chicken and other things, not just canned goods, which it wasn't like a soup kitchen. We had healthy music, Ain't No Stopping Us Now, We're a Winner, playing in the outside as people picked up their fruits and vegetables. This is a way to say, we know you're human. We don't think of you any less, but we're going to also, during a pandemic, give you a few things you don't know about. And people would be like, what is this? We'd be like, that's a turnip. You know, eat it with your greens. Don't throw the greens away. You know, and so that's the kind of happy, healthy approach, respectful approach we had to the community, and it made a difference. As a result, we got another grant that allowed us to give away 17,000 meals. And normally, you know, that would be people doing hot dogs and, you know, craziness. And so we actually did soups so that someone would get a free carrot and ginger soup. And they'd be like, what is that spicy stuff in there? We'd be like, that's ginger. You know, have some. Smell it. And we actually measured the changes in the elementary schools of the children, and they were able to make some choices. They could not choose between what was healthier, an ice cream cone or an apple, you know. And so they began to taste things, mainly because men were introducing them. This, the power of the black male in culture, in everything in this community, actually our vibe, our swag of the black male drives everything. It's very powerful. And so there's the consequences and opportunities of being black and a male in Chicago, in America, mm-hmm. in the world, I just would like for you all to consider what that is about and how it could be used. That power that has been tried to be suppressed for so long can be used. So I am the head of Real Men Charities, which is our organization. It's 33 years old of passion about building our families and communities with men leading the way, saving our children. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Stories. So Scott, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I think that nutritional access is a component of sort of a bigger picture that you're addressing in North Louisiana through your organization. So if you can talk about that.
Perfect segue, thank you. And I just have to say I'm awestruck by all the people on this panel that are doing what they're doing. And our purpose as a nonprofit is to help empower not just them, but the communities that they benefit. And so we're very anxious to do that. So there was a lot to unpack, starting with what Nora started. I'm like, I don't even know where we can go from there. She delivered so much knowledge in a few minutes. But it's health and wellness that powers business and productivity. So as a businessman, as an entrepreneur, as someone who runs 2 nonprofits, productivity is something in this country that I think we're sorely lacking. And I think it's based in bad health and wellness, not just that, but family structure, offshoring of jobs, outsourcing of profits, all the stuff that we've done for my entire adult life has led to a state of chaos in our cities, which lead, you know, that's where the main production is. So we're starting in Louisiana a project called Renaissance, research park, basically that has an intentional community element to it, where we are intending to build a research park with the foundation of industrial hemp. Now, you're probably thinking, well, where does hemp aid to wellness? Well, hemp is a remarkable plant. As many of you may or may not know, it's not marijuana necessarily. It's the same plant, different strain. There's no drug in hemp. Hemp has been used for 12,000 years by man. It was the first plant ever cultivated by mankind that wasn't for food. So we have an incredible history of industrial hemp around the world, but in the United States, we have been distracted from the uses of hemp for many reasons. We don't get a conspiracy here, but we're here to bring it back. We're here to bring it back for construction and wood supply. We're here to bring it back for concrete and plastics. We're here to bring it back for clothing and proteins. All of these things, not just for animals, but for humans, are incredibly beneficial to our body. So starting with hemp, that's really, you know, what we're about. As you see in the slides, we have designed a process, a framework that helps empower what I call communities in crisis. These are communities that can be destroyed by hurricanes. They can also be destroyed by governments and malfeasance. And we've seen both in places like Puerto Rico, where we really started this initiative. So the purpose is to bring capital to the communities first and foremost. A lot of the communities that we're talking about have very difficult access to U.S. dollars. If it weren't for people like you sitting here making donations possible to startups like these and community centers, we wouldn't have the opportunities that we have. That's not necessary. The people can fund their own. And so we're looking forward to talking to Yvette in her community center about how we can implement the SCF here in Chicago's South Side as well. And as well as what Michael talked about doing in Ukraine, we're very passionate about getting resources and allocating capital in the form of community capital to whoever needs it, because it's really up to them. You don't need U.S. dollars to pay for something that can be done with your hands by your neighbors. You don't have to wait for trickle-down from government or from, you know, global aid corporations to get something done right now. And it's not just because your neighbor's house was bombed out by the Russians, but because your neighbor's house has just been decaying. It's boarded up. It's got, you know, pests, or it's got, you know, criminal activity going on next door. Well, if that continues, your property is not going to go up in value. Your neighborhood's not going to be investable by banks. So we want to help raise up those communities using their own power of their own hands. So as far as health and wellness, what this topic is about, we have so much work to do, but it starts with giving people the means with which they can do business amongst themselves, as opposed to waiting in line for credit from a bank that simply won't see them because they don't have a FICO score, because they don't have collateral. That's where we fill that gap. And that's, you know, also what I've done in nonprofit for the last 10 years is build bridges in the economy. I did it first with crowdfunding. I'm chairman of the Crowdfunding Professional Association. This is a trade group that, for lack of better purposes, manages the alternative finance industry in the United States. And we've seen incredible gains in small businesses now having access to capital, U.S. dollars from their friends and family, from their communities, from their customers, money that would have never rained down from venture capital groups who typically only invest $500,000 or $1 million or more in many cases now. And small businesses in Southside, small businesses in Western Michigan don't need $1 million today. They just need enough to get over that hump and prove their model so that it eventually can scale. Sorry, Eric, you want $1 million? Eric wants $1 million. All right. Well, other than Eric, most don't need $1 million right off the bat. It takes a while to get to that space. So as far as the next slide, Gary, so the SCF is what I described. It's immediate capital access to those in need. It's rapid deployment. And as Michael talked about, you know, local currencies, community currencies have been the standard in global commerce for 2,000 years. Fiat currency, the U.S. dollar, the euro, other big bank currencies is a fairly new concept in history. And so we're just making use of what's already in practice, what's already been used for thousands of years. But we've digitized that process now. We've brought it down to such a level of cost, it's almost free to the end users, where before you'd have to print script or print, make coins, mint coins. That stuff's expensive, and distribution and logistics even further complicates it. So, you know, our plan is to empower local nonprofits. We don't want to come in as, you know, some national nonprofit saying, we've got a plan to fix you. We just want to come in and give the tools to local nonprofits who already have relationships with people on the street, people in small business, and empower them with the tools that we've created for this purpose. And that's what we're here to do. So any help that you can give, obviously, we're just now rolling it out. In fact, in the state of Florida, where I've been staying in Tampa for the last couple of months myself, we're in discussions with the University of South Florida to implement a plan there to provide health to students. If you don't know it, and I'm sure none of you do, the state of Florida plowed 500 million pounds of fresh produce into landfills and dumps last year alone. 500 million pounds of produce. How many kids could that have fed? Healthy food the kids could have had in their schools. And we found out that the kids aren't getting health at home because the minute we went to COVID lockdown, all of a sudden we're seeing health deteriorate rapidly. Test scores, performance, all of that has lagged in the wake of COVID. And we now believe that the reason for that is because kids were getting their only source of proper nutrition at school. And that's a problem. So, you know, we can't have people shopping for their kids' health and nutrition at dollar stores or convenience markets. It has to change. And so we want to alleviate those logistical routes from farm to community centers in two ways. A, by helping neighbors tear down the blighted houses between them, help fix up the properties that are not usable. We can create community gardens. Fresh produce can be grown right there in your neighborhood. And then additionally, as we help through industrial hemp and other ways to fill fields, vacant fields in nearby farms, we will build a bridge between the communities and the farmers that the communities and the cities rarely ever see. We're so out of touch with our agrarian past that it's time to make that bridge now, just like we built the bridge for small businesses to access capital through crowdfunding. So that's basically it. And the last slide is just a little graphic displaying a little bit more what we're doing in Renaissance for Louisiana. And we welcome any questions later as well. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. I think, Mark, are we at time, or do we have time for another question?
No, thank you. Again, there'll be a breakout. You can move around to 12:30 lunch. Anybody can go for donuts?
Since you guys.
I offered for Pepper to support a healthy breakfast, Mark. So I didn't hear back from you.
All right, great. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Come join our 361 firm community of investors and thought leaders. We have a lot of events created by the community as we collaborate on investments and philanthropic interests. Join us.